I'm finding a lot of young people who have seen teaching from just their perspective. They've only seen it as a point of view as a student. So the first thing we try to have them do is to go out and observe with other people and other grade levels to really get an appreciation of the complexity of being a teacher. Once they've kind of done that, then they're better suited to be able to go into an educational field. A lot of people go into teaching thinking it's going to be a 9-month job, and so we want to make sure up front that they have an understanding of what's going to be expected of them. The trends I'm seeing are not unlike what I've seen before. We're having shortage areas that we cannot fill, special ed, math, science, and we find that a lot of people are still heading into the younger grades, which are desperately needed now also, but trying to get enough to fill our schools is becoming increasingly difficult.
And this is in spite of ISU having a pretty good reputation as an educator production center.
Yes, that's true. We are one of the leading producers of education majors in the country, let alone the state. And though we do draw from many states away for people to come to our programs, we still have to work very actively to get the numbers that we are comfortable with at our institution.
Nancy, this probably should go to you. You're the ISU representative to the Illinois State Board of Education. How do you see the major shortages unfolding going forward in Illinois? Obviously, rural areas, mm-hmm. urban areas with high minority and poverty concentrations. Maureen already mentioned STEM mm-hmm. as a shortage. Where are the highest needs?
I actually looked at some statistics last night off of open positions in Illinois. And right as of last night, there were 2,000 open positions. Around 1,300 of those were instructional positions, and they weren't anything surprising, just as you just said. They were math, science, special education were the highest areas. About 25% of all the openings really fall within the Cook County, DuPage, Kankakee, Will, so that four-county area up there made up 25% of those. A couple of Peoria, I think, had 91 open, Peoria County had 91 open positions as well. So, I mean, I don't think the trends in Illinois are in any way different or patterning any differently than what we're seeing nationally. They are math, science, they are special education.
And this is even though Illinois has a higher than national average starting pay.
And part of that, I think, is when you do have a large or a couple of large urban areas in your mm-hmm. state, like if you are Chicago, Atlanta, LA, New York, those are going to skew that starting pay just mm-hmm. a little bit, that starting pay figure. But I think we've always examined, we always look at teacher supply and demand. We think of it as a bucket, and we're constantly pouring into the bucket, but the bucket has holes in the bottom. And what we need to research more and more all the time is not only what we're pouring into the bucket and how we're pouring it in, which is ISU's preparing teachers, but it also is what is creating those holes in the bottom of the bucket. And Deb alluded to a lot of those, what creates those holes, but it really has shifted, and where teachers go when they leave the field, when they move around the field, where are they going, all those kinds of things.
Deb Garahy, you're the director of the Lauby Teacher Education Center. What are the holes in the bucket? Is it teacher attrition? Is it retirements? Is it people not going into it anymore?
I think it's all of the above. I really think it's all of the above. And I think that these conversations are cyclical. I'm now starting my 31st year in education, my 19th year in teacher education at ISU. And some of the conversations you hear on the media are conversations that happened in 1984, 1985, when I was graduating from my undergraduate program.
And then again in 1990,
correct.
There was another
correct.
Shortage bump.
Correct. But I think that if you connect the dots, they're very similar conversations. In the past, the longevity of somebody who became a teacher was pretty much there. They would probably be a teacher, maybe not necessarily in their district that they started out with, but they would remain in teaching. again, I think it goes back to some of those conversations, you know, the typical pay scale that a teacher receives for a 9-month position. Going back to what either Maureen or Nancy said, teaching is not a 9-month position. Teachers do things on their own, out of their pocket, because it's what's needed for the student to be successful. Teachers use a summer for professional development, for their own education. And those are the things that the general public does not realize. It must be nice to have the summer off. As a public school teacher, I didn't have the summer off. I chose to supplement my salary by working for the school district, and I think many teachers do. Or they use that time to reboot. You need to reboot.
Yeah. Well, let's cycle back to the idea of the circular nature of this, the mm-hmm. waves that, mm-hmm. that you remarked over the course of your career. Why do we not have more even distribution of age cohorts of educators?
I think because the nature of teaching changes, the audience changes. Other additions here? It is really true that children are children and students are students, but there's just so many different variables that you can never prepare a teacher for. The internet and Facebook and social media did not exist when I was a public school teacher, but that is something that everybody deals with now. We all dealt with bullying and how you handle classroom bullies, but handling bullying now would be a very, very different species, considering that it's not done face-to-face. Mm-hmm. So I think that those things change.
It's a very change. Yeah, I agree. It's changing. I mean, when I started teaching, they prepared us with what to do for a fire drill and a tornado drill, and now it's an active shooter drill.
That's right.
I think it's just, and all professions change. I understand that, but in some ways, the field has stayed exactly very stagnant as far as maybe its pay, its prestige, its benefits, how it's thought of. But it has shifted mm-hmm. in what's demanded of teaching.
The look of teaching still looks the same.
But
you have an individual in a classroom with X amount of students. But what goes on in that classroom, what goes on in the school, what goes on in the district, what goes on in the community is changed.
So you're raising the possibility that the technological shifts have encouraged waves of retirement at certain eras because people don't want to retool after a certain point in their career. Maureen, that one's yours.
There is an element of truth to that because as I talk with a lot of my peers, as I've been in higher education for almost 40 years, when I talk with my peers, as things were not good at maybe the state level, and there was a lot of discussion about how the retirements were going to be shifted and payouts and things like that, everybody that was pretty much healthy, they said, I'm going to hang around for a while to see what happens. Well, what happens is when a teacher who is generating a high income for longevity in a classroom, if they're not retiring, suddenly the school district can't hire new teachers. So I would say there is a cyclical pattern. A lot of it is brought on by external factors. People just don't retire at certain points. When the crash came in 08, or not really a crash, but when we had the down in 08, there was a lot of people not retiring anymore. And so that did cause...
And there were some layoffs, too.
And there were.
And that caused people to come back and alleviated a shortage, at least for a few years.
That's right. So there are external factors that cause this ebb and flow of hiring and retirement.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Deb Garahey, director of the Laube Teacher Education Center, Maureen Smith, head of recruitment and enrollment in the College of Education, and Nancy Latham, an early childhood education professor and the ISU representative to the Illinois State Board of Education. Nancy, you had mentioned that teacher pay in some parts of the state, urban areas, has to be higher to attract people. But the average is skewed lower in other parts of the state. How then do you get teachers to maybe go against their economic interest and go where they're needed rather than where they can get a job?
I think ISU, showing my bias here, but ISU, I think, does a wonderful job of that. It's taken years for them to build the partnerships that ISU has built to do that. And one huge priority here at ISU is looking at providing students with diverse experiences, and especially asking students to look, what is a diverse experience for you? Mm-hmm. If you came from a very rural, small district kind of environment, let's set up the pipeline and figure out ways to get you into urban environments, different socioeconomic levels, et cetera, because it's all about getting you comfortable and getting you feeling like you are you can have an impact in an environment that maybe is not where you would be where you're the most comfortable, because it's most like yours.
Deb, you have a thought.
In fact, the Council for Teacher Education at Illinois State University, which is made up of faculty and students and administration from teacher education, years ago implemented diverse field hours placement. So all of our teacher candidates at ISU, and currently we're about 3,600 undergraduate teacher candidates, are required to complete at minimum 100 pre-student teaching hours. So before they ever get into their student teaching site, they have to have at least a minimum of 100 hours out in a school setting, agency setting, observing, teaching, assisting, and 50 of those hours must be in a diverse setting. So all of our programs, and we have 28 undergraduate programs, are all doing this on behalf of our students to give them an idea of classrooms that perhaps were different than the ones they attended as a K through 12 student.
And what is your outcome? Do people then adopt those classrooms and say, this is where I want to work? Or do they say, no, I came from rural, I'm going back to rural?
I think a lot of it is still determined on where a person grew up, because many of our student teachers, for financial reasons, have to go home to student teach as best as possible. That is, we try to accommodate that in an appropriate setting. I do think that whether or not they end up in a similar district that they grew up in or a very different district, having that different perspective is just as important as where they end up teaching, because where they start off does not mean that's where they're going to finish. I started off student teaching in New York City, and I ended up teaching, I was a licensed teacher in Ohio, very different than the area that I grew up in. So I think it's
what are teacher mobility rates then? I mean, we talk about student velocity as a barrier academic achievement, but how about the teachers? How much do they cycle in and out of a given district?
I don't have exact numbers for the state of Illinois, but I do know that mobility is something that happens, especially early in a person's career, because in the first few years as they're getting the district that they want, or maybe the grade level that they want, you might see them float amongst different institutions or districts. But then after a certain point, as they start getting settled in, getting married, buying a house, whatever, then that's generally where they stay. But not knowing how they do it, you know, the first 5 years of teaching, I can tell you that Illinois State University graduates, that we teach in all 50 states and in over 56 countries. So we do have a very highly mobile alumni base that are in the field of education. And when students are talking to me about the major that they're looking for, every conversation starts or ends with, well, if I want to leave the state of Illinois, or if I want to go to this area, what do I need to do? So they are thinking about those things. I'm finding it more now than I've had, I'd say within the last 10 years, those conversations were not taking place.
Deb, I interrupted you. Did you need to complete a thought? Okay. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking about supplying the number of needed teachers, several hundred thousand a year nationwide, with a shortage projected at least for the next few years. The elephant in the room here is teacher attrition, people leaving the profession. In fact, according to some studies, about 95% of the shortage is caused by the attrition part, people getting out of the career. How do you try to maximize the chance of that it will take as a career?
Well, I think, you know, there really was a shift a few years ago. It's been more than a few years ago now, but there was a shift in the way we thought about making and creating new teachers, and that was that we realized it's been probably 15, 20 years ago when the professional development school movement started. We realized that schools had to partner with us in making the next generation of great teachers as much as we had to partner with schools, that was a dual role. And I think as far as keeping teachers in the field, induction and mentoring is the exact same thing. Another thing that we're doing here at ISU is trying to support our new teachers when they're out there in the field. We have an annual new teacher conference where we bring any graduates back for a free day of PD and networking and try to remain in contact with them in their first, second, third, even fourth year. They can come back for that. We try to keep those relationships. We're doing a lot of things too, and I think it's part because schools just don't have the money that they may have had at one time, and that's another thing when you talk about the pay differential. There's a huge differential in induction and mentoring programs in districts. Some have districts that you're assigned to coach the minute you get there, and you have all these benefits in this incredible program, and other districts, they may have absolutely nothing to do that they can do in the name of induction and mentoring, really. And so Teacher Ed is partnering more and more.
Have those programs been around long enough to move the needle on retention? Teacher retention?
I think, you know, I don't know what the exact figures of induction and mentoring, the impact of those would be, but I do know that when teachers report the reasons they leave the field, you would think one of the top reasons would be pay, and it's not. One of the top reasons is non-supportive administration. And so I think if you were being supported through your administration through an induction and mentoring program, that might not be, you know, because the top reasons teachers really seem to give.
Job dissatisfaction.
Job dissatisfaction, which comes down to shifting mandates, even changing parental demands, again, non-supportive administration. Those are the top reasons they give for leaving the field, not kind of, you know, there are some typical sound bites thrown out there a lot that they leave for the money and that the brightest leave. And all of the research that we've seen, and we have a huge study here at ISU where we've followed our teacher education majors. We have about 8,000 of them in the study over a 15-year period, looking at where they go and where they stick and what other fields, if they leave teaching, where do they go? And you know, that it really, we really are seeing, now I will say we are seeing a little bit of a decline in the attrition rate. If you really look at it over 15 years, it's maybe the hole in the bottom of the bucket is not quite, we're not quite at that 50% that's always soundbited.
Scale that for our listeners, would you? How much lower?
Well, I'm trying to think. The last analysis we did of that, I think we were at about 45% are, you know, still within the field within, but I, you know, And we're still analyzing that data because we really want to look at it this time to see if they leave, where do they go, and how often are they shifting? You know, because typically the attrition data looks at that as stayers, leavers, and movers. So movers are moving within districts, or within, not within districts, but within schools, and shifting positions. And then, of course, leavers are leaving the field. So where are they going when they leave?